Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 88. On this week's show, we review Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype, we have a trilogy of men. Men who are men. Up first is, from the Main Street Gazette, Ryan Wilson himself. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Returning from sickness and or banishment is Brian Bogad. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
And joining us once again over on the Disney Magic Hour is Adam Corbett. Say hello, Adam.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, or visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere, making 700 planet jumps or whatever it's called, go and visit the experts over at MEITravel.com. Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. And if you get in touch with Sharla, she can get you started on your Halloween adventure. We have our Halloween Horror Nights event coming up in October, the 29th to the 31st, with our special guest, Disney artist Kevin John. He's going to be putting together a special piece just for our event. You're going to be able to get cool t-shirts, and we are going to have an RIP tour guide us around Halloween Horror Nights, which recently semi-announced The Shining. I don't think it was official, but it kind of like leaked out there. Right now, you are listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we have Disney Magic Hour Group. Add yourself, add your friends. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play Music. And currently, you can find us at soundcloud.com/DisneyMagicHourPodcast. You can download the app, listen to us across all your different platforms. Melissa, where can everyone find us on Instagram?
At Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And Ryan, where can everyone find you and the magic you produce over at the Main Street Gazette?
So the main site is mainstgazette.com. If you use that Main ST Gazette on either Instagram or Twitter, you'll find us there. And search for us on Facebook, Main Street Gazette, and you'll find our page there.
There you have it, folks. There you are. Here we are, another Marvel film, another review to do. And I feel like we have a lot of Disney films coming up for theatrical release over the next couple of weeks. So we're going to be doing a fair share of current reviews. And if you're a regular listener of the show, you know that we normally do reviews in a much more, what's what I'm looking for, thorough? He's a good man, yeah. Jeffrey, and thorough. Much more thorough way, in that we break down literally every scene, and then we ask three questions towards the end of it. We don't do that with the new releases, but once we get to the timeline of, like, say, a Guardians of the Galaxy, in the normal show timeline, where we start from Snow White and work our way up, we will give it that full breakdown. But not on the first review, because honestly, you have to pretty much pause the movie while watching it to do what we do normally. That's not a possibility yet.
Also, it's rude to take notes in the theater.
Well, I mean, I write on paper.
Well, okay, not all of us are weird like you and can write without looking.
Well, let's not say I can read everything I wrote afterwards, but I figure out the gist of what I was getting at.
Okay.
Before we even go further, though, I want to welcome back on the show Adam. What's up, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good. It's early. I like this Sunday morning thing. We should talk about that later, everyone.
Yeah, it's a good time for me.
It's a good time for me, and my job's getting a little dumb with the amount that I travel lately, I've noticed. So we'll figure that out later. Brian?
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm good.
How are you doing with Zelda? If we can just have a small, just a small sidebar. Zelda. How's it going?
I am loving it right now. I have not had a chance to sit down and have like a real long session yet with it. The most I've gotten is maybe like 2 hours. And to me, that might sound like a long session, but that's not a long session to play a game like that, I don't feel, because there's so much exploring and stuff to do.
Yeah, you can, you can go more than that. I have.
Yeah. Usually I get it for about 45 minutes at a clip, then I get to play it 45 minutes to an hour at the most. And I really like it. I like the Switch a lot more than I thought I was going to like it.
You like a game on the Switch a lot more than you thought you would.
No, I meant the switching back and forth from the TV to playing it in the handheld mode. That's okay. What I mean. Yes, yeah. When we had first talked, I said I did not really like it much at all. It's still a challenge.
The handheld mode.
Yeah, it's a challenge to – it's not as comfortable, so that's when I only play it for maybe a half hour at a time because I can't – it's uncomfortable in my hands. It's made for smaller hands. Kyle is fine with it, and he's 10, so he's fine holding it. But, I enjoy it. And Mario Kart 8 is good, fun. It's frustrating. Well, I don't know for you so much because you can easily get – you can easily be in first place, and then you're in 12th place. But
sounds like a nightmare.
Exactly, yeah.
Sounds like a living nightmare.
When I play against a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, I'm usually all right because they're not smart enough to take me out of first place, so I'm okay at that way.
My only complaint is my largest complaint with Zelda, and then we're going to get into the movie really quick. 80% of that game is me climbing stuff, and it rains 90% of the time when I'm playing, and there's a game mechanic, for those who don't know, in the new Zelda or video games overall. When you're climbing a mountain or something, if it's raining, you slip and you just fall.
Yeah.
And it rains for like 25 minutes at a time of in-game play. So if you get to a spot where you had to climb something, just put the controller down and like make breakfast because you can't do anything. Anyways, all right, let's get back to the movie. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has dropped, I would say... Out of the films that were expected to be big hits, like Avengers was expected to be a big hit when it came out. Those things are very known and advanced. I would say Guardians was the biggest pleasant surprise for Marvel. Not that their other films haven't done well. Ant-Man, made money. Everything's made money. But Guardians took off in a way that maybe most people didn't expect. And even me, who was familiar with it, I had no idea how people were going to react. I was hoping they were going to have fun with it, but you never know. It could have come out and it just didn't connect with people, and they were like, "This is a dumb tree," and that's it. It wouldn't have went anywhere. But it almost felt like a new Star Wars franchise was born when the first one came out. People reacted that strongly to it and enjoyed it that much, and it, of course, had its kind of its thing to it was the music, which has been sort of. Taken off and repainted on a couple other franchises that it didn't fit on, and it didn't work as well. But the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has its own new soundtrack, and it's brought to us, just to give you a little bit of background, and then we'll get into the flick itself. It is brought to us once again, written and directed by James Gunn, who was in charge of Guardians of the Galaxy 1. He's going to return for Volume 3, it seems, and they do a nice job of setting up Volume 3 in this film. Without it being wholly distracting and an awful side plot that makes you just scratch your head and wonder, what are we doing? We'll get into that a little later. So that's a problem that Marvel has had that I thought they handled really well in this. I want to make note of the cinematography. Henry Braham, previously did Legend of Tarzan, Nanny McPhee in Waking Ned Divine. The complaint that I've had about the color palette of Marvel films, it fixes itself with this film right off the bat. This is one of the first steps towards a brighter, colorful, more world, which it's not. The other films weren't as, and they're nowhere as dark as like DC, but they're also, it's like someone desaturated, just enough in some of the other films. Our cast returns largely in... Well, everyone's back, and then we get some more people on top of it. In particular, we get Kurt Russell as Ego. And, it's in the trailer. This isn't a shock or anything. He is Quill's papa. If you don't know who Kurt Russell is, I don't know what to tell you at this point. Just go back to The Thing and start from there. Escape from New York was 81. Thing was 82. So you can kind of start from there. You can also start, if you want, Fox and the Hound. He voices Copper, in case you were unaware. And he should have gotten an Oscar nomination for Herb Brooks when he was in Miracle. We have Elizabeth Debicki as Aisha of the Sovereigns, who show up here. We have Chris Sullivan playing a character that we'll get into maybe later on. He's got a particular face and a name that goes with it. If you didn't recognize him due to the makeup, you know him from something else. More than likely, he plays Benny Hammond in Stranger Things. And if you don't remember who Benny Hammond is, I didn't remember. He's the cook who helps Eleven and gets rewarded for his help by the government.
He's also in This Is Us.
He is. I've never watched a single thing, but that seems very popular right now.
Yes.
What is that damn thing?
TV show.
If You Like to Cry is my gathering
Every week,
nothing but people putting him, they cried watching it. So
I don't know.
I mean, I do that every day for my regular life, so I don't need a TV show.
Yeah. All my pregnant friends on Facebook are crying to it, so I don't know.
Palm Clementife, if that's accurate, which I do not think it is. Shows up here as Mantis. You have seen her probably in the trailers. She's got the little antennas and stuff. And we also have a really nice return, just in particular, Sean Gunn is Kraglin. I'm not going over the main cast. We know who those are. We'll get to them during the regular thing. Sean Gunn is Kraglin is a interesting expansion on his character. He was one of the Ravagers from the first one. He's got a bit of a larger role here, and he was also the on-set Rocket. You know, Bradley Cooper's got things to do. I don't know what they are, but he's got things to do. And being on set for this film is not one of them, evidently. So he just does the voice for Rocket on the side, which I have to find out how they then do the work between him and Michael Rooker, who's Yondu, because they have a couple of really large scenes together. And the fact that they're not working and playing off each other is kind of amazing if it works that well. Melissa?
I'm wondering if they do a thing where, like, he's reading it, kind of like how they had done with Les Mis, like reading it in a booth while they're doing, like, the filming.
He would be on set then.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but do you know who the stand-in is for Rocket?
Well, it's a Kraglin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, so, but Sean Bradley Gunn. Cooper would be in a booth, like,
no,
on
I
set,
don't think
but,
so.
Okay.
Because if he's on a booth, why wouldn't they just put him in the set?
For the audio, to be clear. Like how they had done with Les Mis, with Hugh Jackman, like they had them in like the isolated things. I don't know. Never mind. Forget it.
I don't think he was on set. I think he would actually have been on the set if he was on set. I think that would have made more sense because they're recording audio for both characters.
Yeah.
So they know. If two guys are 3 feet away from each other, you should be able to record fine audio for both of them.
Okay.
That I don't know if that would really be a thing. I know in Her, when they did that film, Scarlett Johansson was not on set, obviously, because she's not physically a being at all in that film. She is a computer. There was a recording session with her and Joaquin Phoenix where they were in the same sound booth, and that's how she recorded. So he remembered how he delivered the lines overall, and that's how they worked that situation. So let's do an overall review of Guardians of the Galaxy, though. We're just going to give our, you know, whether we enjoyed it or not, and then we'll take a break, and then we're going to get into spoiler territory, which there's a lot. There's a lot to discuss about this film in the land of spoilers. So the initial review will probably be somewhat short and brief, but Ryan, why don't you get us started? What did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
It was a lot of fun. You don't have the burden of trying to set everyone's story up in this one, so you can kind of just jump into things. And my wife was really concerned because she's like, I know this is one of, you know, the things that you've been looking forward to. I'm afraid it's not going to live up to it. And how I went into it was really, truly, I'm looking for the same kind of fun, the same kind of livelihood to the cast, the same kind of irreverency. And I got exactly what I wanted out of it. If it's a hair, you know, if it's a little less than the original because it's not as novel, fine. But I thoroughly enjoyed myself with this one.
Adam, how about you? How did you respond? Especially as Ryan was saying, this is a film that had such a huge part one, and it sort of solidified itself as a very different film than the other Marvel films. Did the same tricks work again for you in Volume 2?
Absolutely. It was very colorful. It was very fun. And it felt like, even from the beginning scene, that you were just rejoining people that were friends and were doing this for a while. You didn't have to get through the whole getting to know you, you know, kind of atmosphere. It was fun. I agree with Ryan that it was maybe just a step below the original, but because the original surprised everybody so much, I think it kind of was like, how are you going to top that? But that's not saying anything bad against it. It's an amazing film just by itself.
Brian, how did you enjoy it? And more so, I know you went with Kyle, your son. How did he dig it? Because this movie, as much as I'll agree, like, it hits a lot of the same kind of beats and whatnot as the first one, and we've seen them. I think it goes into a lot of beats that the first film never even touched.
Yeah.
Not even like some other Marvel films haven't touched, well, successfully anyway. So how was your reaction to Guardians?
My reaction was, just like Adam and Ryan, it was fun. I go into these, the Guardians Galaxy movies, to me, I just, from after the first one, I just want them to be fun, out of this world type stuff, you know, like crazy things. They do more of, I mean, all the other movies do crazy stunts too, but this is, you know, the whole, some of the stuff they do in this is really in, you know, insane stunts, you know, insane type stuff, and that's fine. It fits with the universe and it fits with the story. It's fun. It's really funny. Mm-hmm. And the thing that it did for me that it really didn't do for Kyle as much, I mean, he loved it, but what it hit for me was this was much more emotional than I thought it was going to be. And that's where it really hit me. Kyle, I loved it. He, you know, he went in his Star-Lord costume from last Halloween. He didn't wear the mask, of course, because they don't let you wear masks. But he loved it. He liked the action. He was laughing. He, you know, he had no problems with the story or anything like that, because it is a little more, you know, I guess, dense than the original Guardians was in terms of the story. And it was just a great time. We had a really good time at it. And I like what they did with this one a lot. I think they set up some really great stuff.
Melissa, how about you? You were a big fan of the first one. Huge.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Say, what is it like? It's near the top of your list.
Yeah.
For Marvel films?
Yeah, definitely for an ensemble film. The first one was really one of the best. I really like this one, too. I was a little nervous because when the soundtrack came out, I looked at the songs and said, I got nothing.
How much of the songs did you know from Volume 1?
I knew a bit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't know Father and Son?
That one I know. I've heard.
But just before I forget, just in terms of the music, I was very happy because Flashlight comes on from Parliament, and Kyle's like, I like this. And Kyle's like dancing in a seat. I'm like, yes. That's right. Parliament, baby. All right. So just that aside.
P-Funk. Okay.
Yeah.
It's dropped upon you. The mothership is here.
Yeah.
All right. So, Melissa, you weren't as familiar with the track list of the second one. So you were like, this movie's not going to be good.
No. I didn't think that. I was worried that it was going to be something like the music wasn't going to fit as much for me because I didn't know it and wouldn't connect with it. But okay. It worked really well in the movie. So it didn't, you know, hit me at all. And I really enjoyed the movie again. You know, the ensemble was really great. Even though they added to it, they made it even better, in my opinion. Like, adding more didn't make it jumbled or too muddied. So it was good.
Yeah, they add a fair amount of people in here, a couple of different moving parts, or they just give larger parts to already existing pieces.
Yeah.
I guess is sort of a better way to put it. We get the kind of classic Star Trek crew separation method, which, you know, I always find funny because Zoe Saldana's in like everything. Just so you know, she's going to be in 3 more Avatar films.
Cool.
Eventually. One of these decades.
Sure, they're making sequels to that.
Yeah, those are still things. Just so you know, really quick thing on Zoe Saldana. I always forget, Zaldana was also, she was Anna Maria in Pirates of the Caribbean, whatever you want to call it.
That's right.
Yeah, the Black Pearl. The one who was like, she slaps Jack in the beginning because like he stole her ship. That's her. She's so cute.
Yeah.
I thought this was great. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a bunch. I have a couple of little things that we'll get into in spoilers where basically, there are a lot of relationships in this film that you are supposed to care about. And every one of them, I think, works really well, except the one that you're supposed to care the most about, possibly. I think that it just doesn't hit as much as the other ones. Maybe without all the other highly successful ones surrounding it, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. I mean, this is no spoilers. You know, there is a thing. You see it in the trailer. You see a shot of Groot and Yondu. And I remember when I saw the trailer, I was like, what the hell's going on here?
Wait, Groot or Rocket?
I'm sorry, Rocket and Yondu. And I remember thinking, like, what's going on over here? What's this? And then the poster came out, and it made it even more so that you were like, Yondu and Nebula are kind of with these folks.
Yeah.
So what's going on there? So we had that going on. We have the Gamora-Nebula relationship coming back. And we also have not a romantic relationship, believe me, because she is hideous, between Mantis and Drax. And then there's, of course, you know, Peter and Ego, his father, who's played by Kurt Russell, who there's a character that probably steals the movie. And it's not Baby Groot, in my opinion. There's a character that probably steals the movie, but Kurt Russell, just because of how he's portraying the role so big and so brash and everything, like when he gets to, he's just got a great swagger to him. And I think he's a truly effective intro to that character. But there, I may have a couple of, I just don't think that it hit as well as I wanted it to between him and Quill. So with that, that's my only, that relationship, as it doesn't get to the peak that I wanted it to. That's my only kind of gripe with this movie. I'm happy with it being, I think, a pretty different film. Mm. I mean, the ending shot of this film, if you would have told me that's how the second film would have ended after I left the theater on volume one, I would have looked at you like, oh, I guess, I don't know how that makes any sense. But it works extremely well. So, Ryan, did you have any non-spoilery gripes, or do you have gripe a little bit of a thing, but we have to get into it later?
It's more stuff we have to kind of get into later.
Okay.
There's nothing I could say now that won't. Nothing detracts enough from the film for me not to give it two huge thumbs up, but nothing I could talk about without really getting into the minutiae of the movie.
Is there anything that anyone could talk about, like pre-spoiler, that, you know, just to kind of give some folks a little more feedback, more than just like, we liked it, because we did. I think everyone liked it. I think the response to this film has been very positive, but it's always kind of held that little thing, like Adam and, you know, and Ryan and Brian, and I think Melissa, even you, were saying, where it's not as good as the first one. There's something that's not clicking to the extent of the first one, maybe because we've already seen it, so we're not new. Like, Drax doing Drax stuff isn't totally wholly new to us because we've seen that before. Even though I think Drax in this movie is overcompensating on purpose. I think it's a choice. I think it's the way the character's written. He's overcompensating to, like, ignore the memories that, when they do pop up for him in this movie, really bring him down.
Yeah.
You know, like, they bring him down to earth hard and fast as soon as he allows it to even enter his mind for more than a second. Because you see in the trailer, he's, you know, guffawing. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Yep.
He's doing that, and it seems like he's just trying to keep that because he didn't have that for so long. He's forcing it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Did anyone else have anything they wanted to add before we go into spoiler land?
I think this movie has, and just thinking about it, there's a weight on this movie. We are very short order coming to Infinity War.
Mm.
And so there is a certain gravity that film holds that had to be imparted onto this film in some way, whether it's there are little pieces, whether it's just changing the tonality of the story just a hair to kind of build to that. And I think maybe beholding it to that may have changed it just enough to where is what we're all thinking is just it's just that subtle tilt that we're like, this is a Guardians film, but there's something else happening here that's kind of detracting.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. Like, maybe if we watched it in 5 years, you know, once Infinity War is all done and, like, everything's been, you know, wrapped up and whatever, if we go back to this movie, like, would we still have like a thing to it, or would it just be like, without having to worry about how it fits into the greater scheme, like, you know,
good.
No, you know, if there would be that same issue.
I think this is going to work best on its. I think it'll work better on its own because there are ties to the outer universe. But to put it in the most basic terms, there's no Thor in the hot spa.
Yeah.
You know, in Avengers, that was so distracting where you were like, what is going on? Like, why are we here? What are we doing? And then on top of it, that scene was cut to shreds anyway. So it made no sense. You know, well, it made sense, but it made very little sense in the sense that it was in the way it was used. I don't think that this really has that issue at all. The only thing I would say is, I mean, one of its characters kind of gets you on the road to Thanos.
Yeah, but just like that in
road,
our head, maybe.
That road was being paved in the first one as well. I would actually say that the way this film goes towards the finale, I have a really hard time swallowing that, like, the Marvel brass thought that this was where this movie should go. I think this was James Gunn saying, no, this is good. This is going to work. And I would not be surprised if he didn't have to do a little bit of battling.
Probably.
To keep his script in place, because where they go is very surprising and not where I would have thought they would have gone successfully after the first one. So, you know what? All right, enough of all this. Enough of this bouncing around. It's hard to tap around this stuff without ruining it for you guys. If you enjoyed the first one, I think you will enjoy this one very much. If you're okay with taking in a little more of an emotional weight to these characters in this film in particular, I think you'll enjoy it even more possibly than the first one, because things matter a little bit more in this one. Marvel has always kind of handed out get-out-of-jail-free cards in their films. And, you know, they just did it sort of with Civil War, where, you know, Rhodey gets shot out of the sky, falls 3 miles to Earth, but you know he's going to be fine. He's just going to get robot legs from Stark or whatever, and that's it, he's going to be fine. So there's a little more, like, emotional weight and consequences to this film. So does anyone want to say anything before we go into spoiler land? Adam?
No, I'm ready to get going.
All right, Brian?
No, just there's yeah. there's a lot make sure you watch the credits themselves. Like, yeah. I mean, there's the scenes, whatever, but the credits themselves had lots of really cool little things going on throughout the credits that I really enjoyed. It was fun.
One totally random one too.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into.
Yeah.
Ryan, you're good. You want to go to spoiler land?
I'm good.
All right,
I'm
good. Melissa?
Yes, that's spoiler land.
Yes.
Okay. All right, guys. We're gonna take a small break. During that break, we are gonna tell you who won this week's giving away KJ. So enjoy the break. Enjoy the sweet man. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a little break in the action from our Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 review. And I am here to bring you this week's winner of our Giving Away KJ contest. Of course, this is our weekly contest that you enter by going onto the Last Gen Facebook page and liking and sharing the pinned post of the most recent episode of Disney Magic Hour. So when you hear this episode right now, and if you want to get entered into next week's contest, head over to the page, like and share the pinned post, and like the page while you're at it, so you always get these updates up to you know, what's going on the following week and the following week and all that kind of good stuff. So this week we are giving away a 1-of-1 original sketch of Groot, done by Disney master artist Kevin John. If you're not following him on Facebook, then you're missing one of the best people on Facebook, in my opinion. Just search for Kevin-John. Trust me, you'll find him. And follow along. He's always giving great looks at all the work that he's doing, and he's always working on something. And then, of course, visit his website at kevinjohnstudio.com. And when you get your new little fancy piece of gorgeous Kevin John art, 1-of-1 this week, mind you, head on over to spotlightdisplays.com, spotlightdisplays.com. Use the code LASTGEN, LASTGEN, to get yourself a 10% discount on your frame. These are front-loading movie posters. They're absolutely fantastic. We actually just put up a photo pretty recently, of all the stuff that we gathered from Star Wars Celebration. We bought a plethora of frames and put them up on the wall. They're so beautiful. They hang absolutely phenomenally because you put them right into the wall from the frame itself. And the frame borders just load open. They pop right up. You can put in a new piece of art whenever you want to. You can rotate out, which is what we do over here, actually, in the apartment. And they are just absolutely the best ones. So spotlightdisplays.com. But who this week in particular should definitely be going over there for this week's winner is Laura Lang. Laura Lang, one of the first, one of the originals, I want to say, of, you know, our little group here from the film basement, especially, you know, in a Pogo and her connection, you know, her love of Pogo and all that. So congratulations, Laura. You are this week's winner. PM me with your shipping address and all that kind of stuff, and we will get you out your art. I believe Kev is actually finishing it up today or tomorrow, so we haven't even seen it yet. That's the crazy part. So maybe I'll get this before I actually post. Maybe I'll get the picture of it before I post the episode, and I'll just announce you on the site. But if you haven't heard anything from me, PM me, send me over your address. Congratulations once again, and back to the silliness at hand. Enjoy the show, folks. Bye. And we're back. Congratulations to whomever won. As usual, I don't know yet at the time of this recording. I have no idea who won yet. But congratulations to those who won, these who won, him, her, all of you who won. And get in touch with me. PM me your address so we can get your prize out to you. All right. So from here forth, this moment forward, we are in spoiler land for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We're going to talk about everything, whatever we want to talk about. So let's talk about, do you want to talk about Ego? You want to talk about our biggest introduction of a character on this one?
Literally biggest.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Ego is, of course, Peter Quill's father, as we were revealed in the trailer and whatnot. If you didn't know, Ego is a living planet. And we do get to see, like, that whole thing. But really, the main gist of it is he's, number one, a Celestial, which explains why Quill was able to hold the Infinity Stone. I thought he was going to be an Eternal.
I thought
he was going to be an Eternal because they also showed an Eternal in Guardians of the Galaxy 1 when they were getting, like, the whole history lesson from
the Collector.
Was it the Collector? Yeah. So I was like, oh my God, they're going to make his father an Eternal. They made him a Celestial. Fine enough. Works well enough. Ego's a cool character. The name might be a tad of a giveaway for where this film goes. His name is Ego. So, you know, he turns out to be our villain.
Yeah.
Was this obvious from the get-go, or were any of you kind of on the train of he has good intentions for any of it? Adam?
Well, I knew the source material from the comic, so I kind of figured he was going to play the villain role. So it really had no surprise to me. But I loved the lead up and approach. I thought was really good. But the heel turn kind of happened very abruptly.
Yeah, it does. It happens very abruptly.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, like, because, like, we have to, like, get it moving, you know? Like, we get introduced to him, and then it's like, okay, like, now he has to get his agenda. But also, like,
it's a 2-hour and 20-minute film. They have more than enough time.
And the thing is, he didn't give any hints to it anywhere, really, I don't think.
No, Mantis did. That was the thing, is that, like, that's the thing. He played it really smooth. Like, Ego, the character, you know?
Yeah.
But then when the Mantis moment happens where, you know, she clearly is going to tell Drax that, like, everything is on the off, at that point it's already spilt. I don't know, like, if you don't understand at that point that Ego is out to, like, drain Peter Quill, I don't know what else could possibly tell you.
Oh, I didn't.
You thought Ego was still, like, good dad.
I mean, I didn't know if he was going to be, like, 100% good. Like, I'm sure he was going to be, like, something was up, but, like, I wasn't, like...
So you thought maybe he'd be, like, kind of bad, but kind of good still, like...
Yeah, like, there was definitely going to be, like, something wrong, obviously, you know, but, like... I didn't know exactly what, like, and since I don't know the source material, mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly how he was going to use, you know, Quill as, like, his partner. Like, I didn't know if they were just going to do stuff together, like, hold hands and, like, you know.
Did you know he was a planet? Like a literal, like, a planet?
I think you told me that once.
Okay. Did it make any sense when I said that?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I know Marvel, so, like, that idea would make sense, but I didn't know him in particular.
Ryan, how about you with the motivations and the reveal of Ego and just like his build of the character over the film? How'd you enjoy it?
Fine. I do think that turn was abrupt. I also think we get it even earlier on in the very beginning of the film with he and Peter's mother, where he has this seed pod on. Like, you're setting that right there and you're leaving it aside, and there's clearly something else happening there. So if that's not your first clue, you know, I could see it maybe being a shock later, but I think that you should have seen it building throughout the movie, and so it's not really a surprise. Additionally, yeah, we knew about the Sovereign a little bit from the trailer, but we never saw an outright villain in any of the trailer. Like, they never kind of set up who that was going to be. So if you hadn't kind of figured out there was going to be that turn of somebody, you were missing the boat somewhere.
Yeah, my thing with that is actually, I mean, like, Brian, you were saying, you were asking Melissa, did you think it was going to be more of a, he's not really a bad guy, but it's just what he wants to do is bad, but he doesn't see it as that, in a sense. He kind of turns a little too evilly at the end, and I think that if they would have played the middle of that a little more, where if they would have given me a reason to say, you know what? He's got a point.
Maybe he's all right. Maybe he's right, or he's got a point.
If they would have had something like that, it would have worked better, because all we really see is blue goo. You know, like, I'm going to make planets into blue Play-Doh, and they're all going to look like me, and then everyone's going to be fine. And it's like, well, that doesn't give me any reason to, A, understand what the hell that means. And it doesn't really get me behind you. And there's a certain – I like doing that. Like, I like hearing – a villain's commentary and being like, it's kind of accurate. You know, like, maybe this is right. You know, like, Baron Zemo had an had a thing where I was like, it's pretty accurate, you know?
Yeah. Those are always my favorite villains. I think we've talked about it when we talked about our favorite villains for the Disney movie, like, when we did our villains list. I like the ones who, you know, I like a villain that, you know, you can kind of see where they're coming from. You can understand how they got to this. I mean, and there's a little bit of a reason behind what they're doing that you could kind of relate to, you know. None of us are living planets, so it's kind of, I guess, hard to do that with this character. But
we're not.
I think it just turned real quick. I picked it up once. At first, I wasn't positive because I don't know the source material. Although I didn't know he was a living planet, so I knew that was like him they were flying back to, which is strange in and of itself. But once I found out what the Sovereign was, I was like, oh, okay, so there is no big bad, so he has to be the big bad, because the Sovereign is not a big bad. They're cannon fodder bad. You know, that's like what they are at that point in the movie. You know, they're the kids playing video games, controlling their fleet. So that's what it is.
Yep.
So, Melissa, for you, did you feel a good emotional connection when we get the further reveal with Ego and Quill that it was, in fact, it was Ego who put a tumor in Quill's mother? But this was more interesting to me. The reason behind it was he found a purpose, and he knew that if this woman was here, he would have given up all of it to stay with her.
Yeah.
So the only way in his mind that he can reconcile that I can't, you know, I have a bigger thing that I have to do is she can't be alive anymore. Like, I have to kill her, but slowly. You know, I'm not going to murder her, but I am, you know, in my own way. Like, did that hit you like really well?
Yeah, like I think I had almost the same reaction as Quill, like a little like gasp and like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, to me, like that was like, wow, like, okay. Yeah, so I don't know. For me, maybe not knowing the source material was a little bit better. Like, I thought his buildup was good. Like, he came on, he was, you know, suave.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
He's Kurt Russell AF. Yeah, I mean, he's great.
And, like, I know he left the plant thing when you saw him with the mom, but, like, I didn't know what that was. I just thought, like, yeah, he was an alien, like, who was bringing beauty.
That's so suspicious, though.
That's
a thing. Like, that's such a suspicious thing to do. Because, like, we know Earth later, and there ain't no flowers everywhere, so what was it doing?
I guess, you know?
That was really the thing. Like, for me, that also, it was, I mean, they did the cool, you know, Robert Downey Jr. de-aging that they did in Civil War. They do it here with Kurt Russell. So you have, like, you have your Thing era Kurt Russell, you know, driving around in a, you know, a drop top and playing music and hanging out with his girl and stuff. I thought that was great. The opening was really, really nice. You know, seeing Peter Quill's mother and Ego, that they actually had, like, a real relationship. Like, that was one of the things, that, you know, Ryan, that I really liked, was that he didn't turn and be like, I never loved your mother. You know, like, they never did anything like that. He was like, no, the problem was that I really loved your mother. Like, that was an actual, that's the problem that happened.
I like that, especially after they had gone through with, like, him trying to, you know, match his DNA with all these other species and they didn't work. But then, like, the one that it worked with was because he also loved her. Like, that's kind of like a cool thing.
Yeah, that was an odd mannequin sculpture, though, to look at for a moment.
For all the technology this man has, his dioramas could use some more detailing. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. But no, it was. It was a great moment to actually see, one, to have his mother return. We get that return of that character. We get a little bit more of that history. It's without Peter, really. It's great to see that. And the fact that he did, you know, he wanted to know that she was gone, but he didn't want to see it happen, that he needed to make sure she was off screen. That was where, like, my writer's mind kind of kicked in, and I was like, yeah, but in the lifespan of this being who's been around for millions and millions of years, what would it have been to his plans to have delayed another 50, 60 years to spend the time with her and have that, you know? And
that's a good point.
Yeah, and so it that played on my mind a little bit, going, it's a drop in the bucket for you. Like, that's not, you know, that's like me saying, oh, I can go spend a weekend with my grandmother. Like, that's not a thing. But I did love that development. That relationship, you could see it. It was very clear. You could definitely tell there was emotion there. And then when you turn towards Peter, it gets a little bit less. And I don't know if that's, you know, because Peter had built his dad up to be this true god in his eyes anyway, prior to finding out he's kind of a god. That relationship needed something else.
You know what, though, Ryan? I think they do actually. Now, it just popped in my head. I think they do give you a good reason why he can't do that, because he still would have to return home.
Yeah.
Remember, if he doesn't return home, the planet dies. Right. The light dies. So 50, 60 years may not. It's not a long time in his existence, but it may be too long that he wouldn't be able to keep the planet going.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how long it takes. I don't know how long it takes traveling back and forth when you're a celestial to get to a planet and come back. I feel like it probably doesn't take very long. Just swing by, like, fill up the fridge and then go back. Like, I don't know how that works. How long do you have to be at a planet to make sure the light stays on?
You just gotta wait till it charges and then you can take off.
So that was supposed to be our main relationship, I would say, in this film. I would think, but there's other relationships, and I want to go through those as well.
I kind of feel like the other relationships were almost like more important. Like,
I think they work better.
Yeah,
because, I think they work better.
Because, like, the relationship between Peter and his father is, like, just for this movie, whereas the other ones, like, they'll continue. So.
Yes, yeah, because you could say there's a relationship that. It kind of has wrapped. No, not that you can. There's a relationship between Peter and Yondu.
Yeah.
That has a greater impact on both characters in this film than when he meets his actual father, which is the point, you know, from the story, you know, from the screenwriting point of view. But let's start actually with Gamora and Nebula. Gamora and Nebula are, of course, the daughters of Thanos, and Nebula is made mostly machine because every time that she would lose to Gamora in one-on-one fight, Thanos would feel that he had to improve upon Nebula, and by doing that, he would tear out parts of her humanity, or whatever you want to call it, and, you know, affix it with technology to make her better, to make her faster, to make her stronger, this and that. So she basically was a tortured toy her whole childhood.
That was one of my favorite scenes, was where Sean Gunn's character, like, asks her, I guess, like, where she's going, and she goes on that whole rant of what happened to her, like, yeah, that she wants to go kill her father, and he's like, okay, have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a great moment.
But it was great also because it connects with Gamora. Like, Gamora gets the understanding of, oh, you know, she was always so overly competitive that she couldn't lose, that all, it seems like all Nebula ever wanted was one time where she didn't get tortured afterwards. And if Gamora would have just let her win, fine, you know you're better than me. But you also, she was under the impression that she knew what was going on afterwards. Mm. And you made that happen to me. So the fact that they actually got to work that out, and now Nebula is kind of going to kickstart, not kind of, she's going to be a major player in Infinity Wars. And because she's the one, she's like the only one who's really looking for Thanos. No one else is. Everyone's kind of like, guy in the chair. So I was really happy with the way they worked on that. Brian, you know, if you want, I'm sorry, I feel like we didn't even get to you on the ego quill thing. Did we? I don't believe so.
Well, no, it's you guys pretty much covered everything with that. I agree with you. That was the relationship I found to me the most lacking, but I did jump on it with when Mel was talking. I just felt that it turned very quickly.
Oh, that's right. That's right, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I did really enjoy the whole you know, the having the catch scene and everything, and made me feel very Field of Dreams.
Yeah, that was funny.
You know what I mean? It was like, that was kind of, I really liked that. Yeah, that was the only one. It felt, I guess maybe because it had to be, it felt like it turned quick and like everything happened quick. But
the Brandy scene that whole, was the best scene. The Brandy scene where they're going over the song. That was their best scene together, I thought.
That was their best scene together. That was the most,
it clicked the most.
It felt the most real, like the most intimate, I guess. But when you got to think of it, he's a celestial. He is a living planet. I don't know how, you know what I mean? Like, how much that factors into the way that he is very egotistical, obviously. You know, I felt like it was, you know, he was Big Trouble in Little China, you know, in those parts. And, you know, I liked it. I just, that was my big thing, was the turn I thought happened really fast. He turned on a dime.
Called his spaceship the Pork Chop Express. So what about Gamora and Nebula? Did you enjoy their interactions?
I did. I did. I felt very, you know, that especially that last scene when they're you know, after the Yondu thing and she catches Nebula as she's leaving. I thought that was a great scene with them. And, you know, that was another, there was a lot of like heavy emotional scenes, and that was another one. And, you know, you feel bad. You realize they were two just abused children, basically. All that Nebula really wanted was a sister, like, was just to for her to show that, I guess, that she cared about her and stuff. And it was touching. And, I think that it's, I like her character. I think it's, like you said, that's going to be the way we find our way into the Thanos Infinity War stuff, is through Nebula. But overall, I like the two of them. I like the two of them together. I think they play off each other really well.
Ryan, part of me was thinking at the end there that Gamora was going to go with her.
Yeah, I thought she might either go with her or she would stay. She would convince her to stay begrudgingly. There's never a moment in this film where any of the women in this film that you don't believe that they can take care of business.
Yeah.
But then you get to see that real side of, like Brian was saying, they were two abused little girls. They were both terrified. And so that was why Gamora had blinders on. Like, she was taking care of herself. In that big sister role, she kind of failed her sister, and she realized that. This movie is really, truly a lot about redemption. I mean, everywhere you look, there's a redemption story somewhere. And this was one of the more touching ones because it we get to see the payoff for this going down the line. There's more to this story that we're going to get to see. And the fact that there's a bond there now that hasn't been there before, it makes it very, very interesting to see if, when it comes to it, can Gamora pull Nebula back from the abyss? Can, you know, or does she follow her down that rabbit hole? So, yeah, it's like a watch this space kind of a thing.
Melissa, what about you? Sister relationship, speak towards it.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. I really liked how, I don't know, this kind of relationship really did speak to me. You know, you have the one sister, like, just trying to reach out and, like, she just wants that caring, you know, relationship. And the other sister is just like, no, we just got to survive. Like, do whatever we got to do to survive. You know, I don't have time for emotions right now. It was really good. I really liked Karen Gillan. She's one of my favorite actresses.
She's one of your favorite actresses?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Karen Gillan had her big breakthrough in Doctor Who. She was Amy Pond. She was companion to...
Matt Smith.
I liked her a lot in that show. Liked her a lot. And you know I didn't love Matt Smith, but I really liked her.
I really liked her. She was really great in the show. And I think she's really good. I'm glad they gave Nebula...
She's really good in this.
Yeah, I'm glad they gave her more of like a leader role because...
Yeah.
I think her emotional ups and downs are really good and she does them really well. I loved, like, you could totally understand why one scene she was really angry and emotional and then the next one she was like sad. Like, I don't know.
Sad Pond.
I liked it. I liked how they developed her.
Let's talk about the most surprising relationship though in this. And that, you know what, I could say Yondu's with the whole film. But yeah. we'll start initially with Yondu and Rocket. Yondu and Rocket basically get in the same cell together because the Ravager's trying. I don't have to tell you the movie. That's why you're listening to this. You already saw it. We're not going to do that kind of stuff. So Yondu and Rocket are, they kind of have their time to bond. Now, leading up to this moment, we already sort of learn a lot more about Yondu. Yondu has a phenomenal interaction with Sakaar, who's played by Stallone. And we're going to get to the post credits thing. You don't cast people who were casted in this unless you have plans.
Oh, yeah.
So we're getting a Ravagers film or an alternate history Guardians film because, guys, that was the original Guardians of the Galaxy lineup. So, alternate Earth and different stuff. And
oh, that's
if you noticed some Doctor Strange. Hand movements, it's because that dude in another alternate universe or whatever, I think it was Earth 619, which is the Rey Mysterio Earth. It's just... just
you just killed Brian.
It's... he's trained by Strange, who really in that one becomes the Ancient One and really that guy, what was his name... Kruger. He actually becomes the Sorcerer Supreme. Anyways, getting back to that. We learn about what Yondu sacrificed, basically, or screwed up in a deal that he made with Ego, and then really the sacrifice he made to keep Quill away from Ego. And it got him basically kicked out of like the Ravagers proper because he traded in kids. Now he obviously didn't know, he was younger, he was dumb, he was just, you know, desperate for the money and this and that. So he did that, serving up Ego's children to him basically on a silver platter to find out whether or not they could help him in his ultimate plan, Ego's ultimate plan. But then when it came to Quill, he didn't pull that trigger. He didn't want to give him over to Ego because he knew what would happen ultimately. And so we meet basically the leader of the Ravagers, who is Stallone's character. And Yondu isn't this cool, everyone loves Yondu guy. He's an outcast.
Yeah.
You know, he's got only his crew who thinks well of him, and that's it. He's an outcast from everywhere else.
And only some of his crew, really.
And then his crew turns on him, and the ones that stay with him, they're thrown out into space and die slowly. Remember that for later. And so we see Yondu in a place where he's got no swagger. You know, he's just sitting in a chair like done. And it's the conversation between him and Rocket that gets like all these different emotions and stuff, you know, stirring and coming out of Yondu, and Yondu becomes the emotional anchor for the film, sacrificing himself to save Quill in the same way that his crew was killed earlier in the film. You know, he does it to himself, and he gets this grand kind of Wrath of Khan, more so, funeral, you know, with, you know, all the Ravagers, like, basically, you know, taking him back in because they've learned of his sacrifice. And I think Yondu is the biggest emotional punch in this movie, and it was on purpose because that's how we end the film. We end the film on Rocket shedding a tear for Yondu. I mean, Ryan, if I told you that's like a month ago, would you have thought that's just insanely ridiculous?
No.
all right.
I will tell you, I told my wife probably a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, we were talking about who our favorite characters from the Guardians, who we were looking forward to seeing again. And I said, and I was like, I'll tell you this. I think Nebula and I think Yondu go up a mile in everyone's eyes after this movie. And I think just because of the way they were included on the posters, because of the way they were included in marketing, I knew there was a story coming. And I was but I was blown away by the depth of where they took it. To make him, you know, we all knew that he was the father figure to Peter from the first one. That's not a surprise. But the fact that Peter never really saw that, the fact that it was like he was, you know, just the angry teenager, angry 20-something at his father and doing whatever he could to piss him off in the first one. And Yondu's just like, it'll be okay. He's my boy. It'll be okay. And to actually see that come to fruition and see Peter realize it was amazing. But you also get the sense that he and Rocket share more, you know, there's a huge connection there between that they are of the same fold. You know, they are birds of a feather. They're, you know, they're these gruff outward guys, and they do that to keep everyone at arm's length, you know, because they don't want to be hurt themselves. They don't want to hurt anyone. So it's better just to keep everyone a little bit further away. But I will never, ever hear Jay and the Americans again without thinking of that scene of them
perfect song
coming back through, you know, and taking back control of their ship after the mutiny. That was the perfect scene.
Yep.
And then Yondu, you can argue, has the best line.
Yeah.
While coming down, you know, what was exactly he was holding?
His arrow.
It was his arrow, right? Yeah, it was just the arrow. And we get, you know, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. That, I mean, this is a great. Okay, here's a good thing I thought of. Brian, what do you think about this? So in this film, Rooker is playing Yondu, but he's playing a Rooker-ass character. You know, he's kind of a redneck-y, you know, brash, annoying, you know, character.
Yeah.
I think this is the version where that character is written correctly and it works and everything works. And the wrong version is when he was in Walking Dead.
Yes.
And it shows that it's not the actor that was the issue there. It was the writing.
Yes. Because it's yeah.
You get space, you know, Walking Dead, basically. I forget what his name was. Merle?
Yeah.
You get Space Merle here. That's basically what Yondu is. He's kind of Merle. But he's given real connections to everyone, and he's funnier, and there's things to latch on that actually make you care about the character. Were you surprised at all by how much, or did you? Did you get invested into Yondu's character in this one? And if so, were you surprised by that?
Yes. Yes and yes to both. I was, you know, I got heavily invested in him, you know, coming as a father. Like, you know, like that scene choked me up at the end, like, big time. Like, I'm glad I saw it in 3D because I had my 3D glasses on. So Kyle could not see me because that
woman
that really hit me, that the, you know, the whole scene and just everything about it. I think they played it perfectly. I think they did a great job. He did a fantastic job of acting in this movie. The way they broke him down and kind of, you know, let out these different layers of Yondu, I think was done great. And you know, at first you just think he's the, you know, he's just this, like you said, the same jerky redneck, like, you know, wannabe cool guy, almost like Taserface you know, like let's that type
about
of
Taserface.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Like that type of
let's
thing.
Talk
but
about Taserface.
Yeah, but he, you know, you realize that there's much more to him, and Ryan said it. You know, he uses his he hides his emotions to keep people at arm's length, so he doesn't get hurt and he doesn't hurt people in return. But, you know, you really feel the love that he has for Peter. You know, it really came through, I think. And then when Peter realizes, you know, even when he gives that nice little speech, you know what? They do a great job of making it funny, but still emotionally heavy at the same time when he's talking about, he's comparing his father basically to David Hasselhoff. Yondu to David Hasselhoff. You know, I mean, like, it's funny, but it's also like there's real meaning in there and there's real, you know, it's real emotional stuff. That's the sort of stuff that I said Kyle didn't pick up on that I did. Like, you know, I said after we got out of the movie, I said, oh man, that really, I felt really bad when Yondu died, you know, and he said, you know, I said, that was really sad. I got really sad with that. And he said, oh yeah, that was bad. You know, that was sad, but it didn't bother me that much. Like, cause he didn't get like, he doesn't know that feeling. I think.
Also, he's probably going to be a serial killer when he gets older.
So that's Connor. Connor's going to be the serial killer.
Cool. Good.
That kid's got no emotion. Just so you know, that's Scott's child. So
good to know.
Just letting you know.
So now we finally get a death that sticks.
Yeah.
That's also a thing. They literally set him on fire. Look, there's some
colors.
Alternate universes. We did get a Ravagers thing. If you want to go real deep on it, you could have Yondu appear in a Ravagers film if they time travel and dimension hop and all this crazy stuff they could do. But, Adam, do you think that this is something, a death that matters and a death that, you know, sticks, is something that's been missing from the Marvel Universe?
Absolutely. But we also have to keep in mind, we are very close to Infinity War, and Infinity Gauntlet can do very interesting things.
Yes, it can.
But that being said, Yondu was the heart of the film. And I think he had to go because he was the heart of the film. It made us feel for that death. And quite frankly, he's a little overpowered. I mean, that whole movie, he's just taking everybody out. And
yeah, he's kind of kills like everyone.
I think he, for the role he served in this movie especially, he had to go. And I think it'll stick, I hope. But it was, I felt it when he died. I saw this movie twice already, and I still teared up the second time at that scene.
For Yondu, the man who sunk Disney Infinity.
See, they just had to wait, and
that's
they could have had all those, you know.
Version 2.0 Yondus could have had the bigger mohawk, and they would have sold a million of them. They would have been fine.
That's why he was overpowered. He got an upgrade that was out of his class. Yes,
just get a shield. Just buy someone. Buy a shield.
Can I tell you a funny story?
No.
I was at Toys R Us yesterday, and I walked down the one aisle, and they had Disney Infinity figures still on the shelves, and I saw the Yondu. I'm like,
oh,
you should have bought it. It'll probably be worth something.
Yeah, just like the ET games. Hey-o. So yeah, no, I thought that this was something that's been missing. They've given us fake outs. You know, Coulson fake out. Even though it wasn't meant to be a fake out when they filmed it.
Yeah.
In
if
defense
anything,
of that one.
I feel like Rhodey.
Loki.
I think
Rhodey
was
out.
The biggest one that
Loki,
they missed on.
Also, fake out. Now, Loki, it doesn't matter. They did a death and they took it away by the end of the movie.
Wait, they made him die?
In Dark World.
Dark World, yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Yeah. But I don't know. I kind of thought that was supposed to be a play.
I understand, but it's still another, like, nope. Ultron
and
didn't do anything. He just killed my excitement. That's what he killed.
Well, the only thing, they killed Quicksilver, and he meant nothing to anybody.
Yeah, no one cared. This was the first death that I thought of a character where they built up enough where you were like, oh, wow, it's a bummer. Like,
yeah.
That was, I liked this guy. Even when he was the bad guy, I still liked Yondu.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought he was a cool character. So going forward, as Adam, as you were saying, you know, the Infinity Gauntlet can undo and also do multiple things. I really don't hope they do that. But I also wouldn't be surprised. It's comics. I mean, if I read comics going, this death should be permanent, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm just equally stupid thinking that would happen in a movie. But
I feel like they might save the Infinity Gauntlet power for that for a different character, though.
I think down the line, yeah. I mean, I don't really think we have to, like, hush tones about it. I mean, everyone knows I think Cap dies.
I know.
Yeah.
And then I do think
we talked about that last week. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ryan, what about you? I mean, are you happy to see, I mean, well, in a way, are you happy to see A Death That Matters finally happen in the Marvel Universe? And do you want, I don't feel like it's a necessity, but do you think that going forward with the stakes that we're supposed to feel for Infinity, the way they're building it up or not building it up, essentially, what do you, you know, how do you feel towards that?
I think it's fine. And that's kind of what I was speaking towards earlier, trying to be non-spoilery. I think they needed to have some deaths that matter before you get to Infinity War, because otherwise you get there and you're all of a sudden like, wait, are we sure these guys are? There's no gravity to it. There's no, you're gonna sit there in theater and go, yeah, okay, but they'll find a way to save them, or they'll come back because it's just magic, or you have all the outs. We've seen all the outs. You just went through the list of them. Now we have one that really means something. And right, it's a comic. They can time travel. You know, we could do the whole, you know, Colossus dies for a legacy virus and then comes back because we need him again. You know, they could do that with everyone. I think with the MCU, because there are so few opportunities, because there are so really few movies every year, it's not like you have 12 issues of 50 books coming out every single year. The deaths need to matter, and they need to stick at some point, especially moving towards Infinity War. And so I think this is that first step. You know, I don't know, thinking of what we have left on tap before then, I don't know that we see another one until we get into Infinity War, but yeah. it needs to be in the back of everyone's mind that it can be there and that there are real stakes.
Was the lack of Thanos a surprise to you? Because I remember when way back when we were talking about this movie, when it was first thought, I thought this was going to be an intro to Thanos film. I thought it made the most sense that, you know, they're already out there and stuff, and we can get more of a Thanos introduction. He's not in this at all. So we still really haven't seen Thanos do anything. We've got the movies coming up around the corner. I doubt that he's going to play a part in Spider-Man. He may make an appearance in Ragnarok. I would think he does.
He will.
Yeah.
So, but how much of a thing? Were you surprised that he wasn't involved here at all, though?
A little bit. He was so big in the first, you know, he didn't do a whole lot, but he was present. He was the reason that we had Gamora and we had Nebula. There were reasons that, you know, he was around. You know, he's playing around in the background on this one. You hear about him several times. I think at this point, knowing that Infinity War is going to be two movies, you're going to see him start making moves from the minute one of that movie, of the first one. And the first one's going to be your setup. The second one's going to be, you know, your real, true Infinity War. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with him being kind of laying low for a while. We've pretty much figured out where everything is. We know where the pieces are. Also, we have to look at timeline a little bit to know that this movie is actually set 3 years in the past, 4 years in the past from Infinity War when it starts next year. So if we start looking at that timeline, we're actually going back several steps in where we are with the MCU now.
Okay.
There was only so much that they could do that wasn't going to be like, well, wait, how does that interact with another film we've already seen?
That's a good point. I didn't know that. That's a good point. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm happy that it didn't get bogged down with, like, hey, we've got to set up some other stuff. But I was personally kind of surprised at the lack of Thanos. But with that absence, they introduced the Sovereign. There's a lot going on in this movie. Like, I'm now realizing it. Like, there's a lot going on. When we do this film, like, really do it, this is going to be a long friggin' episode.
It's going to be a Mary Poppins episode.
So we get introduced to the Sovereign, these golden folk, the perfect genetic whatever. Aisha is probably pretty much their leader that we see. And, of course, you know, Aisha is a hip song. Aisha.
Aisha. Another ABC, another bad creation. Oh, man.
So they're going to be our nemesis in three, in volume three.
You think it's going to take that long? Also, because yes. I actually read up on
I don't think so. I don't think we're going to have Adam Warlock in the Infinity
Wars. That would be disappointing for me, but I kind of agree.
Because he has the Soul Stone.
I understand that. I don't think they should do that. I don't think that, to me, is if you ever saw the movie Murdered by Death, it's a play on you know, mystery novels, and how in mystery novels the cheapest ones introduce a character at the last minute, and it's like, oh no, it was him the whole time. It's like, what the? I wasn't even given a chance to figure this out because you didn't tell me until the end. That's sort of what I would feel like if Adam Warlock had the Soul Stone. Now, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen, but the Soul Stone is out there still. We don't know where it is. Maybe something happens where we see that they get it as that final piece for Adam Warlock, which is what that post-credit scene is. And, I mean, Warlock's, I mean, he eventually, he's part of the Guardians. I mean, it's not, he doesn't like he stayed, yeah. You know. But I don't know. I don't think they're going to bring him in before that. Because if they do that, but they couldn't, like, ship out and get, you know, Carol Danvers a much meatier right. part in the Infinity Wars, I'll be a little pissed. I'll think that's kind of a crappy thing to do. So, yes, he is a big part of the Infinity Gauntlet, but they're not writing the comics. They're just not. They're not putting the comics up on there one-to-one. So, but would you want him to be there? Like, someone that you barely got introduced to, you want him to be, like, the final piece of the Infinity Gauntlet?
I think that would be really cool, because, yeah, like, right now, like, you don't know anything about him at all. He's just, like, this, like, whatever, creation from the... So, like... If you brought him in and he was like this really powerful thing or whatever, I don't even know anything about it. So like just in my own head, like if he was really powerful and like maybe he's the one that like kind of brings them down for the first Infinity War and then like they have to defeat him and then he becomes part of the Galaxy Guardians or whatever, however it goes. But like, I don't know, like it would be really cool to just get, I don't know, I'm like still craving that X-Men factor in Marvel. I know I'm not getting it in my MCU, so if like they had...
What factor?
Like that not human, but like really powerful, like... And like, I don't know, like I just want
They screwed
something.
Up at Ultron. Yeah. You just described what Ultron should have been, and he's not. He wasn't.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. But like, but then to also be on the good side.
You too. Want a big bad. You want a big bad that actually does things.
Yeah, but then if he, because you said he goes to the Guardians eventually, so like then if he was good
is he,
and
is
like,
he officially part of the Guardians lately,
well,
Adam? Do you?
Not recently, but he's been on and off the team. But if I can, I'd like to make a prediction on what they're going to do with Adam Warlock.
Prediction? Pain.
I think it's kind of too late for him to be in Avengers 3. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think he'll get the Soul Stone after Avengers 4.
That's what I think.
Which will set up Guardians 3.
Yeah.
He'll have the Soul Stone by Guardians 3 or in the middle of Guardians 3. And I think the big bad is going to be his alter ego. It's going to be the Magus. That directly comes from the comics. He's going to have to be his evil half. So I pretty much think that's where they're going to go with Guardians 3.
I don't know if they'll call him that, but it'll be like his dark half. Yeah. It just might be a little too comic booky for some folk. But yeah, I think that's where they go. I think that from the conflict and the gems go all over the universe, possibly one of them lands in the direction of the Sovereign, who can't nail down this Adam thing that she's creating, and the Soul Stone is the final piece.
All right.
And then she sends him out. Honestly, I don't want to see somebody out of the blue come in and be the problem. Thanos is supposed to be the problem.
Yeah, no, I didn't necessarily initially mean that I wanted him to be a problem.
Okay, but you wanted him to fight everyone.
No, that's the thing. Like, I didn't. No, I wanted him to come in because he has the Soul Stone, kind of like Vision. Like, he comes in like with this piece, and I don't know how it played. I want him to be more on the good guy's side.
Give it time. Eventually, it will. I just don't think it's right. You can't introduce a character that strong into these characters because we're invested in the ones that we know.
Yeah, I guess I'm really not, though. That's the thing. Like, after Avengers 2, like, I really am not. I don't care about Infinity War, honestly.
Iron Man, Captain America, you don't care about those characters at
all? Nope.
You don't care at all about them?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. Well, you're not going to get your wish because that's not the way it's going to work.
No, I understand that.
But yeah, Avengers 2 was a bit of a disappointment. So let's talk about just one final thing, because there is a ton to go over in this film. But I think we kind of covered all that good stuff already pretty hard. Let's just talk about the couple of the end credit scenes, and particularly Sakaar and the Ravagers. Who he basically gets the old band back together, and who's that made up of is the silvery looking thing that is Martinex, that's Michael Rosenbaum underneath all that. Mm-hmm. You might remember him as Lex from Smallville. We should, I would hope. Michelle Yeoh as Aleda, who's also Sakaar's ex-wife, if I remember correctly. There is a talking computerist kind of thing, mainframe. It's voiced by Miley Cyrus. That Miley Cyrus, the only one. Kruger doesn't say a thing, but he's the Doctor Strange kind of character. And Ving Rhames is Charlie 27. So I think it's weird that they casted the entire thing and we're never going to see them again in a really big instance. I don't know where. I don't know if they get their own movie. But if you give me like a Stallone-led Ravagers S, basically if you gave me a good version of Expendables, I would be on board for that. They would get my money for that. I like that cast.
He looked like he was in shape.
He's always in shape. It's crazy. So I don't know. I would pay to go see that. Brian?
Yeah, 100%. I was like giddy, like, whoa, like who are these people? Like, who are these people? And Kyle's like, what's going on? Because he doesn't know who any of them are. So he wasn't getting, he's not getting excited like that. I was like, it's being raised. Don't worry, I'll say bad later. but I would definitely be up for that. Yeah.
Adam, do you think they're going to do that?
They are going to be in Avengers 4. I can almost guarantee it. When they're fighting Thanos, they're bringing out everybody. Everybody's going to be in that movie. And Final Showdown, they will be in it.
Ryan, do you want everyone in that movie? Everyone?
We've talked about it before. I think there's a way to trim down that list a little bit with the Infinity Gauntlet. And I think I think it'll be a surprise as to who makes it through to the final battle, who doesn't, and who ends up coming back because of the gauntlet. But I think at some point you have to have everyone on screen just for that one splash page kind of look. If I were making a prediction, my prediction is that you don't necessarily see them in Avengers 3, but you do see them in Guardians 3. Adam Warlock is your big bad. He realizes that he's on the wrong side. He flips. You get his split personality side that they're battling against. And you have the original Guardians team led by Stallone, and you have Chris Pratt's Guardian team. And they're with Adam now going to battle the other side of this. If I were making predictions.
I almost feel like they could work the Adam Warlock the right way that they haven't really done so far with Thanos. Like, they have an opportunity to make, like, a second really big bad and make it feel like something is coming. Because I want to be excited for Thanos. I remember when I first saw him, I was so excited. And now it's just like, all right, what are we doing? Like, I've gotten to that point.
The question becomes, what are you building towards after Infinity War? I mean, those meetings have been had. They know where they're going.
Yeah, but they know.
What
yeah.
is it? Where, you know, and is there going to be a hint of that from the end of Infinity War, or are we going to start all over again and just get little bits and pieces from everywhere else?
I don't know. It's tough when you just got back Spidey, but we'll have to see what goes on with that. Stan Lee, we get a final – well, not a final. Oh, my God. I hope that's not accurate. Jesus, that came out bad. We finally get the fan theory-ish. He's not a Watcher, but he has some kind of connection with the Watchers. I don't care. I saw Uatu on screen.
Yes.
Like, I don't like. It doesn't tell you exactly like what Stan Lee is in that, but I just love the fact that there's Watchers. Their job, their existence is to listen, and they're bored by his stories. That's so fantastic. It's so fantastic. And yeah, we got to see Uatu, which is just the craziest thing. That may have gotten the biggest reaction out of me in the movie. When that happened, I just sort of looked around. No one else reacted. I was very upset.
No, I started smacking my wife like, it's Uatu. She's like, it's a what? I'm like, never mind.
It's a Uatu. And then just during the credits, Jeff Goldblum is there disco dancing with everyone else. He's not even connected in this movie. He just must have been around in costume, and they were like, do you mind if we just shoot this little thing? We're gonna have you in the credits for a movie you have absolutely no connection to. And he's like, yeah, of course, life finds a way. So Goldblum finds a way into the credits. So, all right, we could talk, honestly, for like another hour, I think, about the smaller details and getting into all the plot. We're going to save that for the bigger episode in 2 years or whenever we get to it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I actually want to see it again, just to kind of dig into it a little more. Brian.
Oh no! Did you guys all see it in 2D, 3D? Did anybody see it?
I saw it in any
way other than 2D.
I saw it in 3D, and there's no reason to.
Same with me. I saw it in 3D because Kyle really wanted to see it in 3D, and this is like his franchise. So I was like, all right, I'll splurge for it. And then I said after that.
Yeah, Melissa, did you think there's any reason to see it in 3D?
No, I thought the first one was really pretty in 3D, and I actually liked 3D. It. This one, I didn't feel like it was necessary at all.
Yeah, I didn't get anything from the 3D at all. No, it didn't detract it. It was just I didn't understand what was going. Like, there was no point. That's just so to get more money from the ticket. But unfortunately, it was in the 3D. Nicest one.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, the 3D worked for you, Adam?
Yeah, I went to see an IMAX 3D.
Okay.
And I felt like the overall depth. I mean, there wasn't a lot of pop out, like gimmicky pop out, which I appreciated. But
no,
I enjoyed
that.
The 3D environment.
Ryan, how about you? Did you see a 2D or 3D?
I went 2D. I think this goes back to what we were talking about recently with like the color palettes being a little too muted. And part of me with that with 3D is like the polarization on the lenses sometimes takes away a little bit of that for me. So I knew this was going to be big, splashy colors. I wanted to see the big, splashy colors. So I went in 2D.
I'm looking forward to watching this at home.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. 4K, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, don't hold your breath on that. And Disney seems real hesitant to pull that trigger. I have no idea why. But I don't know what they're waiting for. I thought Rogue One was the perfect entry since it was shot in that resolution, in a resolution that would work for 4K anyways, make it worth it. Okay, so I thought it was great. I don't have it ranked yet in anything. We'd have to revisit that after a couple more films. We'll do that after the first Infinity War. We'll do a re-ranking because by then we'll have Thor, Spidey, and Infinity War Part 1 under our belt. I think that's a good... And Black Panther, right?
Yeah, Black Panther, too.
But not Captain Marvel.
But not Captain Marvel. No, that'll be post... No, that's before... She comes out before Part 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, before Part 2, yeah.
Ultimately, it's the post Part 2 where that list really matters.
Yeah.
But we can give an updated one after Part 1 and kind of see where it goes from there. Does anyone want to say any final words towards Grandmaster? Towards Jeff Goldblum? Towards Guardians of the Galaxy? We'll go around the virtual table. Adam, you go first.
I am Groot.
Brian?
Mary Poppins, y'all.
Ryan?
Pac-Man.
Oh, yes.
Good point. Melissa?
I liked it. That's all I got.
That's all she's got, folks. I already said my words. So, yeah, I think it was great. Go see it. It was fun. I want to go see it a second time. I think that if you're a fan of the first one, you'll enjoy this one. I think your kids will enjoy it. If you have kids, there's nothing too crazy for them to worry about. Marvel does a good job on that again with making it seem it has stakes, but it's not, I'm going to murder you, Superman, that kind of stuff, which that was my Batman, by the way, in case you didn't. That's our folks. Wait, that's our show, folks. That's our folks show?
Sure.
That's our folksy show. That's our show, folks, for this week. Next week, I don't know what we're doing yet. We're going to figure that out, actually, right after we stop recording. It might have to do with Walt Disney, right? Is that a possibility?
Sure.
Right? Okay, I think it is. It has to do with Walt Disney, the big W, the Wu-Tang. Wu-Tang, Wu-Disney. Till next week, this episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe or the galaxy, visit the experts over at meitravel.com. Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you are listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Facebook, Disney Magic Hour is the group. Add yourself, add your friends. You can find us on iTunes and Google Play Music. And you can also stream and download all of our episodes across your devices at soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. Melissa, where be the Instagram?
At Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
Ryan, where can everyone... I'm so sorry. I cut you off a little bit at the end. Where is that again?
Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
I'm so sorry. I cut you off a little bit at the end. Where was it again? Never mind. Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
If you use Main ST Gazette, You will find it, the website. You will find us on Instagram. You'll find us on Twitter. Search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, and we're there as well.
Adam, where can everyone find you? What are you? Where are you?
Oh, you can find me on Facebook. Just look for Adam Corbett.
Brian Bogad, you're a denizen of the Disney Magic Hour Facebook page, I believe.
Yeah, you'll find me on there a lot. I'm not on there as much as I used to be, but that's because like I got to do work and stuff now. So I got a new job, you know, promotion in the same job, but it entails much more work during the day, and I don't have the time to be perusing the group as much.
No, I don't care.
Yeah, I'm trying, but you can find me on Facebook. Yes, you can always shoot me a message, friend request me. I'm friends with everybody.
Aww, very friendly sort. Brian, what do I do next? Say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Till next week, folks. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Adam.
Goodnight, Adam.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
I am Groot.
Goodnight, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo. Hey, did I just say goodbye? We didn't talk about Groot at all. We're going to go around just really quick. We didn't say one word about baby Groot that entire time. So we already said goodbye, but we started talking about Groot after we recorded. So, Melissa, what's there to talk about Groot really quick?
He's a baby.
He's a baby Groot.
No, he was really cute. I liked how he was the comic relief. I feel like his inability to comprehend things worked better here for some odd reason. Like, I don't know. Like,
kids are dumb.
Yeah, like, and it worked, like, in a way that, like, you knew maybe that he would eventually get it, but you were unsure, like, if it would actually work.
Okay. Adam?
The opening scene was all Groot, and it was amazing. I loved it. Made me smile. He was great in the whole movie.
Brian Bogad, Groot, speak to me.
I'm just impressed that they had Vin Diesel come in to deliver the I am Groot lines as baby Groot. Like everyone said, he was fun. The beginning scene was great. I loved it with all the fighting in the background, and he's just dancing around oblivion. He's like a child, like a kid most of the time. And it was good. He was cute.
Ryan?
I think it speaks volumes to the fact that he's such a big part of the marketing, but you did, and he's critical in the points in the movie, but he doesn't detract from anything. He works in really well. It's not a huge part. And when you do see him, you know you're in for a really fun kind of scene.
Yeah.
And I love the spoiler, not the spoiler scene, I'm sorry, the
post-credit
yeah. scene with yeah. him, and, yeah. like the teenage Groot. And he's like playing, he's basically playing a Switch. And he's got a messy room and all that stuff. And I thought that was great.
I'm ready to have him show up in Infinity Wars full Groot as a big reveal.
I think that's where they were going. That's why they did the teenage one.
Yeah, I would assume so. I want him to be
4 years later. Timeline's back off about 4 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So
time to get there.
I want that to be like a big reveal where most of them show up, but you don't see Groot yet, and then he like makes a grand entrance as Groot. Yeah. So all right, guys, there you go. A little bonus yakety yak there.
I liked how he was still like stopped dancing when Drax looked at him during the fighting beginning.
We can call him Batista.
It's cool. Yeah, I know.
All right, so you know what? Instead of doing the whole goodnight, on the count of three, it's going to 1, 2, 3, and then we do it. We're all going to say, I am Groot. And with the delay in Skype, it ought to be a mess, which is the point. So, ready? 1, 2, 3.
I am Groot. I just found the keys to a city that beats a